Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, welcome to the podcast. How you doing? I had such a great response to the podcast last week. As you know, I wasn't even 100% certain I should run the pod because, of course, not everyone is going through the menopause. But I had such a great response and a lovely message that just came in today, actually, from someone who said, I'm an avid podcast listener. You've kept me on the sober track and I'm compelled to write to you. And just want to say nothing has resonated more than your recent interview with Meg Matthews. The timely piece has coincided with my own diagnosis. And then she goes on to say, it's a taboo subject, Janie. Like you, I don't like anything synthetic necessarily, etc., etc. Thank you so much to you and Meg for shining a light on this subject. So yeah, that's great. And I really, really appreciate it. It's so great when people give me feedback as well. Thank you so much. And of course, if you can write a review for the podcast, if you enjoy it, that would be amazing too. We've got a fascinating topic this week with Alex and Lisa, who I've interviewed before from the Sober Experiment, now from Be Sober. And we're actually going to be talking about the serious topic, really, very serious, of what it's like for children who have alcoholic parents, or what it's like for people who live, you know, with alcoholics, how you navigate that, and the impact on the whole family. And of course, we touch on the whole issue of lockdown and how that has made such a massive difference. And it's one of those topics that it's not talked about enough. It really is not. We're going to talk about the charity that Alex and Lisa are working with. And I should have known about that charity. You know, I'm kind of kicking myself a little bit because I didn't know about them. But, you know, what can we do? We just have to raise awareness from where we're at right now, don't we, really? On the note of heavy stuff, I don't know if anyone heard the Archers. If you're listening in another country, then I'm sure you still will have heard the Archers. The BBC programme, The Archers, has been going forever and ever. And they're known for kind of tackling some tricky topics sometimes. And this week they've been tackling, alcoholism and the character Alice. I won't spill all the beans. And I didn't actually hear the episode. And actually, I think I would have found it a bit too harrowing, actually, if I had. But it's all there. It's in this case, she's pregnant as well. So we're talking really seriously rock bottom drinking. So that's out there on the Archers. It's been Alcohol Awareness Week, of course. Denise Welch, she was my podcast guest a few weeks ago, talking about her fantastic book, The Unwelcome Visitor, about her depression. She wrote a great post on Instagram. I love the way that Denise is so open about her mental health issues and the part that alcohol has played in that. So open about it. So if you haven't heard that podcast, do go back and listen to it. It's really remarkable. She really explains depression so well. Again, you know, yet another one of those topics that not everyone fully understands. It's hard to understand this stuff if you haven't experienced it. But I think it just makes you so much more aware, so much more compassionate. If you're able to get your kind of head around some of the stuff that Denise is talking about. And yeah, she did this great post on Instagram, which was just really, really, I just thought it was so inspirational, really. What else can I tell you? I have got a book coming out in February. Seems a bit early to tell you about that, doesn't it? But anyways, it's coming and it's very exciting. It's called Happy, Healthy, Sober. And you can actually pre-order it. I should put the link up. So that's really cool. Oh, and the Sober Club is opening for new members. We thought we'd, it's this thing of, look, we know what this year's been like. You don't need me to tell you. One of those years where, you know, you got the holiday you never would have booked for yourself. That was a line from Reginald D. Hunter. But, you know, we can finish the year strong. And why not give yourself that gift of coming on board in the Sober Club and looking at the what you can focus on. So if you're on, if you're sober curious, if you're listening to this and you're still thinking about it, or maybe you're on day one, or maybe you've had countless day ones, then, you know, it's the place for you, because everything is there, really. You know, we've got our 90-day course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. We've got so much content and support, absolutely masses and masses of support. And we've watched people time and time again just go through this process. It's completely non-judgmental. In fact, somebody said the other day, if there was an award for the most non-judgmental site on the internet, it would be the Sober Club. So I'm very happy to take that. I'll have a paper hat. So that's all there for you at the early stages. But if you're 6 months in, or if you're 9 months in, or if you're 2 years in, or I think we've got one member is 6 years, that's also absolutely fantastic, because what we're focusing on is all these other layers and everything connecting to optimum health and well-being. So, you know, we go through all kinds of stuff in the Sober Club and we mix it up. And of course, not every single thing will be relevant for you, but loads of it will be. And you can focus on whatever challenge is next for you. You can focus on the nutrition, the weight management, the mindset, meditation, what you're going to do with your life, finding your purpose. There's just so much there. I am really lucky that, just like with the podcast, you know, and I've got access to some amazing guests. I'm very fortunate. Similarly, I get great people come and share content with us in the Sober Club. Next week, we've got coming up very soon, we've got a food addiction coach, and that's going to be an exclusive session where our members, you know, can ask questions. So there's a lot going on there. I kind of, you know, it's not a big sell, but I just would love you to benefit from it if you think it's right for you. So we open December the 1st. So drop me a line if you're interested. We're going to have 24 hours where it will be at the same price as it's been before. And then after that, the price is going up. So join us, end the year strong, if that resonates with you. Let's hear this interview with these great gals, Alex and Lisa. My guests are Alex and Lisa from Be Sober, and I'm told that that stands for the Manchester Bee. Tell us about that, one of you, before we go any further.
You're first on this one, Lisa.
What's the Manchester Bee?
It originally started in Manchester with a few of us just missing out on connection. We couldn't go out without, well, we could go out with our drinking friends, but we just found that we didn't have anything in common with them anymore. So yeah, a few of us met up and created, originally it was Be Sober Manchester, and we had it's changed now, the logo, but we originally had the Manchester Bee. So that's kind of how it started in Manchester, but now it's grown worldwide.
Amazing. I love it. The Buzzy Bee, Be Sober. Okay. And obviously the Sober Experiment, of course. And we've interviewed you on the podcast before. I love the work you gals are doing. Tell me about this new thing that you're involved in, because I know you've done some volunteer training. And one of the things we're going to talk about is this really tricky issue of what it's like for children who have alcoholic parents. It's not a topic I've really covered before, but I do find it fascinating, particularly with all the added issues around lockdowns and kids being isolated. So yeah, just tell me a little bit about what led you to do that work. I don't know who wants to go first.
You for this one.
So because of my upbringing, my father was an alcoholic. His lifestyle meant that alcohol was everywhere. So he owned pubs, he was a singer and musician, entertainer, and he very naturally got sucked into that lifestyle of tea time drinking when he finished work, and sleeping in the day because he was working so late in the evening. And he was a functioning alcoholic, you know, he held down a job, but it did bring a lot of tension into the household. My mum drank to join him, if you like. So I guess through a lot of my upbringing, it did feel that I was very different than my friends. I would kind of be nervous having friends over in case they saw or heard something that maybe they weren't used to seeing. My parents were absent a lot, albeit I never felt neglected, and I wasn't neglected. My upbringing was just very different than a lot of my friends was. So I never really fit, and I didn't know why. And as I've got older, there's a charity now called the National Association for Children of Alcoholics, and we actually came across it through Sober Dave. Sober Dave introduced us to Josh Connolly, who is an ambassador for NACOA. And after speaking with him on several occasions, we realized that initially as the sober experiment and now as Be Sober, we would love to start donating regularly to a charity that was close to our hearts. So that's how we got involved with NACOA in the first place, just donating money as and when, raising money. And then the opportunity to become volunteer speakers came up. So we both decided to put ourselves through the foundation training, which means that we could work on the helpline, we could work on the email, and with one more session, we will be volunteer speakers for NACOA. It just tied in really nicely with the work we already do with the workplaces, the rehab centres and schools, because it gives us that extra angle. So instead of talking about stopping drinking, getting sober, how to do that, this is about supporting those people who are living very much in that environment and parents that don't necessarily have the tools to deal with their children and their children's emotional needs.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing I think is really interesting is, you know, you mentioned that your dad, you know, you spoke about your dad and you said, you know, he was functioning and held down job or whatever that meant to him. So, you know, it must be quite difficult for kids to identify that there's something different. I mean, they don't sort of label them, kids don't label themselves as a child of an alcoholic parent. They just know that that's the way life is for them. So how do they get to the point? And I guess it's different for everyone, but what's often the path where support can be given? I suppose it's a daft question, but maybe you can do something with it.
No, I don't think it is a daft question, because I think actually when you're living, you've hit the nail on the head there. That is my normal. So when people go, I'm like, what? Oh, it's not sad. That was my life. I don't know any different.
Yeah.
I wasn't neglected. I wasn't abused. And that isn't the case for all of these children. You know, some are much more extreme than others and living where, you know, even their nutritional needs or their clothing isn't being met. So sometimes neglect and abuse comes from there, and that's very obvious. And in that case, NACOA works closely with professionals and teachers, so you can actually be referred down that route. There's also the opportunity for parents themselves to recognise that I'm drinking too much, I don't want my family separated, I'm a good parent, but I can't support my children, and to, you know, help their children and refer them to trained counsellors on the volunteer line. But I think for me, although I didn't know that maybe I needed support, it's as I've grown up, and NACOA support adult children of alcoholics as well. Right. And I think that's where they would have been really useful for me, because when you grow up, and this forms part of the training, doesn't it? When you're a parent, when you're a child in an alcoholic family, if you like, or with one alcoholic parent, the child will start to fill a certain role in that household.
Yeah.
So, you know, they describe four roles, and I can only remember a couple now because one of them is really close to my heart. And it's like, you know, I was the hero child. You know, I was constantly aiming to be the best, didn't want to grow up that way, getting A's at school, didn't draw any unnecessary attention to myself in a bid to please them so that things didn't go off the rails.
Yeah.
Whereas my younger sister was more kind of the mascot and the scapegoat and would act out and play up, and the attention would be very much diverted on her. And it's just about how those children develop certain coping strategies within that unit. Mm. And then that is what makes them kind of different.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's really interesting, isn't it? How, you know, we see that some adults who have grown up around a lot of alcohol, you know, with their parents, will take the same route and drink themselves and you know, get heavily into addiction themselves. And others will steer absolutely clear of it. You know, that doesn't mean they're thrown clear emotionally, of course, but they, you know, they'll choose a different path. It is fascinating. Lisa, what do you think has been the impact of lockdown for families, you know, where some of the parents are alcoholics?
Oh, it's made a really big difference, hasn't it? The calls to NACOA have actually doubled during lockdown from children. Wow. And is it called the dropped call when, you know, that number has kind of rocketed as well? So where people are ringing and then putting the phone down.
Wow.
So like Alex said, it's just rocketed. It's really, really sad, really, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And it's that isolation, isn't it?
So do you think that's because, you know, because over lockdown, people are generally drinking more? So people who wouldn't necessarily have been at rock bottom, in inverted commas, are drinking more, and that's having that knock-on effect? Or is it that the people who are already the, you know, the alcoholic parents, the kids are basically stuck with them, and they don't have the respite of being able to go to school and friends' houses and stuff?
I think it's definitely a mixture of both. What I noticed during lockdown, and it massively affected me actually, is when I was out shopping and all the queues were down the alcohol aisles. And I remember just kind of sat there, especially, you know, I was doing our volunteering in that time, and thinking, oh my gosh, there could be some children now just queuing with their parents who were trying so hard not to pick up a drink, just thinking, please don't get one, please don't get one. And that really annoyed me, actually.
Because a lot of the queues were forced down that aisle.
Yeah, they were.
And I think there's definitely an aspect of the other as well, that people who would already be drinking very heavily, it's escalated. I think between February and June, the at-risk drinkers, it was reported they doubled up to 8.5 million between February and June. And that, you know, it was half that in February. So it is definitely a combination of the two factors.
You know what, as well, I think we have this vision of people that are ringing Nakua, that they are from these families that, you know, with alcoholic parents. But some children, just like grey area drinkers, or those that were drinking with the friends at the weekend, seem to be meeting up with the friends a little bit more and drinking. So children are kind of being pushed to one side a lot more than they normally would be. And it's not always from what you would expect, the typical alcoholic parent as well.
So do you have a number for Nakua, if anybody would like that phone number?
All the information, they're best finding it on the website, which is www.nakua.org.uk. And they're actually just about to launch a brand new website, which is going to be much more functional as well. But there's all sorts on there. There's stories, there's the helpline, there's the email helpline.
There is also what I think is massively important is that everything and every phone call is completely confidential. And that's something that we found really interesting, that nothing will go any further. In fact, they've struggled for funding, haven't they? Because they couldn't, or they wouldn't show the stats due to confidentiality. So every single phone call that is made, completely confidential.
Doesn't show on the phone bill, doesn't show anywhere. So, you know, it's hard, kind of, the audience is going to be quite difficult in terms, and this is where we do struggle, like, how do you get this message to the young
or to
people,
the children? Absolutely.
That actually need it. And, you know, but there's all sorts that, you know, people can do just by raising awareness, you know, some volunteer work, getting involved, helping to raise money for the charity can put them out there. There's a lot of teachers and schools now becoming aware of this charity. So there are ways of getting this out there. And in fact, there's a really lovely book called Lockdown Nell, and there's an audio of it as well, which tells the story of a young girl in lockdown with an alcoholic parent, and it's aimed at very young children. So, you know, you can kind of even show that as a story. It's not, it doesn't have to be explicit, go to Nakua because your parent's an alcoholic. It can be very subtle, very gentle.
That's good. And of course, as you say, some of this will come from one of the parents, you know, and you know, who are either concerned about the other parent or concerned that they can't, you know, help their kids to the extent they'd like to. Slightly changing the topic, but still along the same lines, you know, with families. What's your view on how people cope when they have a partner, you know, who is drinking? I've come across a situation with a sober club member who's having this problem, and it's a really difficult one because, you know, when things are really black and white, it's kind of easy, isn't it? Well, it's not easy at all. I don't mean that. I mean the path is clear. If someone is literally, you know, at rock bottom and they clearly need to go to rehab or whatever it is, and that can be dealt with and everyone can see that's the case, but there's all these gray areas where someone is maybe, you know, has done exactly that lockdown thing and kind of tipped over the edge and is now massively impacting the life of the rest of the family, you know, their partner and children if there are children involved. What on earth do they do? You know, that in the situation that I know of, one partner really loves the other one. And it's really not as simple as just, right, here's your stuff, I'm putting it on the step, off you go. You know, it's not that simple. It so isn't. And when they've tried, you know, having a conversation when that person's sober, or when they've tried writing a letter and passing that over when that person's sober, and you know, the answer will be, yeah, okay, everything will be all right again. And then by the next night, it's not. What happens then? Because then this phrase enabling comes in. Mm. Just explain what that even means. And then I'd love your view.
This is a really difficult one, and one that actually is quite close to my heart, because my ex-husband was an alcoholic, and once I'd stopped drinking, it really highlighted how much he was drinking and all the things that I'd actually been putting up with and not realising, because without realising, I actually had become an enabler. Mm.
What does that really mean?
It's difficult. It's kind of, you want.
Are you covering up for them? Is that
what
it is?
Yeah, but also helping them to do it. Mm. Because life for Lisa was easier if he had access to alcohol.
Mm, I see what you mean.
I think enablers get like a bit of a bad reputation. And I think I see a lot of things about enablers do this, enablers do that, and it's their fault, they're helping. And it's so easy to become an enabler without realizing, because you do it to make your life easier. You know, if your partner comes back and they've got a couple of bottles of wine and you know where this is going to go, it's sometimes easier to drink that wine with them. So like, I used to fool myself and be like, you know what, I'll have this and then we'll be on the same level and it will be all right. It won't annoy me as much. That's kind of how I used to think. And then just not saying anything, knowing that they might wake up really angry. So then not mentioning it the next day, or trying to wait for a time where you can have the conversation and they're not going to be mad at you, or they, especially if they're in denial. So then you never have the conversation, because the time is never all right. So I think like writing the letter is, you know, a really good way to do it, but it's also a really scary place to be. And I think people accidentally become enablers and make things all right.
Particularly if there's children, you know, they want to protect the children as well, of course, if they've got kids.
That's it. And I think looking back now, I can see I was far from protecting my children.
Yeah.
Absolutely far from it. And that is something that actually doing the volunteering with Nakua made me really see it from the other side, of that I was a parent, my husband was an alcoholic, I enabled without realizing, what have I put my children through?
And what could you have done differently, and what would you recommend now then that someone in that situation does?
I suppose this is, but you said you can't just like kind of pack the bags and go, but I genuinely wish that I'd have found the strength to do that earlier and be kind of not take it all on. And I did in the end, you know, I managed to leave, and it was the best thing for me that I ever did. And that might not necessarily help somebody that is feeling like that, but it was to protect my children. That's what I needed to do.
What about if there is, you know, we hear this word intervention, don't we? What is it possible to, create an intervention where that person, you can get help for the other person? Or is it that someone can't be helped until they want to be helped?
I think that's a mixture of both. We've spoke to, you know, we did a podcast, didn't we, with a lovely guy called Ben, and his family actually did an intervention on him, and it worked out really well. He ended up
not initially though, did it? Initially, he was in denial, but he didn't want to hurt his family, so he kind of went along with it, but without
what kind of intervention was it? What you mean? They tried to get him to rehab or similar?
Yeah, with him it was rehab, but I think, you know, there are other options. It's not only packing the bags. And I said to you at the start, you know, this is where we might differ, because, you know, there are other ways of doing this. It doesn't even have to be that severe. But I think sitting down and saying, this is impacting our family, why don't we try and take alcohol away as a family for a while and let's just see what it's like could work. Not in all cases, because in Lisa's case, that definitely wouldn't have worked because she did it.
Yeah, we tried all that. Yeah, forgot about all the things that was tried.
She tried all that. And, you know, sometimes you do have to exhaust other avenues before the last straw. And I think that's why it takes so long, Janie, to get to the point of enough is enough, because people are trying different things. You know, we talked about my dad earlier, and he was, in the last 10 years of his life, he didn't drink at all. He would not have been able to do that if my mum hadn't have said, I'll stop with you.
Right.
And she did. In her, she didn't need to necessarily stop. She drank a lot, but only to fit in with his lifestyle. Like, you know, she was an enabler.
Yeah.
And she stopped. And, you know, it made her a bit miserable for a little while, in honesty, but less miserable than the lifestyle was making her.
Mm.
So there are ways. And I think it does massively depend on the extent of the other person's drinking.
It just breaks my heart to think of, like, when you say about your member going through that, because, oh gosh, I would never ever want to go back there. It's really, really sad. But when they're in denial, what can you do? If they're denying it and you can see it, I think it is a case of them having to want to help themselves a little bit as well. And I think you've got to do what you can to protect yourself, your sobriety, if that's what you're aiming for, and your children.
Yeah,
and to educate yourself, you know, around the different bits and pieces, because there are organisations as well, and I don't know a great deal about them, but Al-Anon are a fantastic organisation that will support the loved ones without ever even getting involved with the alcoholic.
That's true.
Or the alcohol dependent person. So there are organisations, and I mean, even, you know, we have our weekly sober lounges where people drop in. Some of those people are drinkers, but their family members aren't drinkers, but their family members are, and they come just to learn about what is going on, how that person feels. And I think sometimes just a bit of empathy, because we have to, you know, call a spade here, and alcohol's an addictive substance. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
And unless you're willing to kind of recognise it for what it is and start getting that help, you are on the start of a downward spiral.
Yeah, totally. And then the other sort of layer of all of this is when people kind of recognise years down the line. I came across somebody else who, as an adult, has, I think, I'm pretty sure, stopped drinking or is drinking mindfully, but has sort of almost... not suddenly, but they've had full realization now of the trauma they went through as children. And that can be an interesting one, can't it? When much later you're kind of blindsided by what you went through, by those childhood experiences. Now, I always find it fascinating, and I'm sure we've had this conversation before, but when you study it, when you look at that kind of ACE study, the adverse childhood experiences, it's quite astonishing the level of addiction, that the link between adverse childhood experience and addiction is unbelievable, isn't it? Something like 95% or something bonkers, you know, of kids. And when you say adverse childhood experiences, by the way, for anyone listening, and if you're new to this, I was quite surprised to find that, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you've had sort of full-on abuse. It can be much more subtle than that. Mm. But, you know, as children, we do take, you know, children do take this stuff on. So anyway, I think my question is, where, you know, in your view, where do people start when they, as adults, are really, and perhaps particularly if they've stopped drinking themselves or they're on the path to stopping drinking, they're seeing things a bit more clearly. They're not numbing out now. So now all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I didn't even know I had that to deal with. And they go back to this, to what is effectively trauma, absolute trauma in childhood.
This is another really tricky one, because that is exactly what happened to me. And I had grown up all my life with that as my normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, witnessing some quite horrible things, really, but feeling guilty forever calling it out, because this was my family. I never wanted to be taken away. I don't think it would ever be bad enough that I'd have been taken away. I don't know. And it's only after kind of a trigger, another trauma in my life, that these other feelings really surfaced. And we, again, Lisa and I really differ on this, because Lisa just refuses to go back to the past. That's that. It's gone, it's done, move on. Whereas I have to analyze the past to heal. Mm-hmm. And it's been a huge journey for me. For me, I had to have counselling to come to terms with what had happened before I could start to even contemplate moving forwards. For Lisa, it was very much about learning the tools that were healthy to move forward.
Yeah.
I think especially, again, going back to the NACOA training that we had, that started to raise a lot of memories and a lot of feelings for me. And I'm like just short of 2.5 years sober. So I thought I'd like got done it, was all right, was fine. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what are these feelings?
You struggled a lot actually, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't like it. And what I found is that every single day it was affecting me going through this training. Yeah. And I was constantly going back. And I said to Alex at one point, I was like, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not doing any of it. It's making me miserable. I'm not doing any of it. She was like, you've got one more session, Lisa. So I was like, all right, okay, I'll do that session. But yeah, I find it really hard to go back. And I've been in a good place. So for me, going back,
I get that completely.
I'm happy to, like you said, I do a lot of meditation and mindfulness and EFT tapping.
Yeah, exactly. I'm an EFT practitioner. Yeah, it's true.
Massively helped.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you can find tools that can help you reframe, you know, I'm also trained in NLP and there are some wonderful NLP exercises which can help you sort of reframe and you don't have to go back in detail into all of the trauma. Because what I do find interesting is that some people, while they're drinking, if you have a conversation with them, they want to stop and they keep going back to day one and keep going back to day one. And if you get through, if you sort of break through some of the fog, as it were, you finally get down to one of the reasons that they can't stop is that they know they're going to have to face this stuff.
Yeah.
100%. Somewhere deep down, they know, oh my God, well, if I have to be clear and clear headed, I'm going to have to look at this and it's too terrifying. What do you say to people who say that?
Well, something that I do when I'm coaching people is rather than going back and dredging up the past, because I'm not a trained counsellor and, you know, coaching and counselling, as you know, are very, very different. And we shouldn't really be digging up things that we're not then trained to deal with at the time. But something that I do quite a lot of is looking at how the feelings of the then and there and then feed into the responses of the here and now.
Yeah.
So without kind of going over the trauma, you can kind of look at, well, what survival mechanisms were you using then?
Exactly.
That you are now using now that aren't serving you in your current life.
Yeah.
And that will start the foundations of talking about things like barriers and limiting beliefs. And when they realize that this is just a survival response, often you can break through that without ever needing to dredge up the past.
Yeah, it's true. And also it's great when we realize that these stories that we've been holding, you know, for all this time, you know, the I'm not good enough, the I'm this, I'm that, you know, when we actually look at them, we can break them down. It's like knocking the bricks out of the wall. We've all got this kind of wall of limiting beliefs. So, it's quite incredible when, you know, even now I sometimes kind of catch myself. Now, I've done so much work around this that you'd think I would know, but none of us do it on ourselves enough, do we? and you know, I do so much work with other people around limiting beliefs. And then suddenly I'll catch myself thinking something about myself. And I have to go, well, is that actually true?
Yeah.
It's not, that's not true. It might have been true when I was 8 or something that somebody said to me, but that's another brick that's got to come out that wall, you know, till you can collapse it. So it's very true. It's fascinating stuff. It really is. And it sounds like a great charity. So, you know, if people want to sort of get involved, I'm guessing they can go online and have a look at the resources and, I don't know, make a donation. Are there any other ways that people can get involved?
Yeah, well, you know, you've pretty much covered it there. They can actually, they could even become a helpline volunteer if they wanted to do by contacting NACOA and do the training themselves. There's no kind of prerequisite. You know, you'll need a DBS clearance, the usual kind of things. But the training's very thorough. It's fantastic. The two people that do it are lovely. Mm. Generally, you can donate. You can also become a member. That costs £25 a year. The money goes into supporting the charity, but then you also get invited to be able to help moving that forwards, you know, offer your opinions, the annual meetings and so on.
Great.
Regular newsletters. And then, yeah, I'm actually doing a half marathon in May. You can sponsor me if you like.
Oh, my God. That is impressive. I've literally just started running. I am so crap. so crap. I mean,
is that a limiting belief there, Jim?
It's a limiting belief, but it's also a reality. I hate to tell you, I had to get over the limiting belief to even start, but now I'm in the reality. But you know, I'm doing it. Doing it, but
well,
you know,
done.
I mean, if I were going to do a half marathon, I'd have to allow about 4 days.
That's all right.
I'm not joking.
You can do it eventually, Janie. That's all. But yeah,
really? Okay. Well, we'll chat again in 6 months. I'm really impressed. Anyway, is what I'm saying. Really impressed. great. Well, we'll put all those links and everything in the show notes. And I think, as we said, as we touched on earlier, what's really great about this is that, you know, I didn't really know about this charity until you told me. And I should have done, shouldn't I? You know, so I think way more people need to know about it so that the word gets spread around. And as you say, teachers need to know about this and GPs and just everyone so that there's the support there. And also the other thing about all of this is that there still is this secrecy around drinking, isn't there? So the more this is out in the open, the more it's going to diffuse that secrecy. Do you think that's become even more of a thing over lockdown?
I think so. And that's something that I was going to say, actually, that for anybody that has been drinking or found that they've been drinking too much and they think their children have been suffering, you know, there's no shame in giving your children the number to ring. Like we said before, it's all completely confidential, and I think sometimes that shame stops us from getting help or even stops you from getting your children help. So that's why, again, we love that it's confidential. But the stigma around alcoholism, I think, is still huge, and we're, like I said, pulling bricks out of that all the time. And it's something why we love doing what we do. Everything with Be Sober is about being positively sober and removing that stigma and that shame around it, because there is so much, especially with mums, I think, at the moment.
Yeah,
there's a lot of mum shaming goes on.
There is.
You know, mum shaming the other way as well. If you stop drinking, you can't be part of the mummy wine culture.
Oh, God,
the mummy wine club. And you know, there are lots and lots of leaflets and resources for the different professionals on the website. But I think what you've just said about removing stigma, removing shame, and just being more open. Look round. Everybody, we are a very small percentage who don't drink. So there are going to be more people in the position of needing help than not needing help. So we really do need to start looking at this as kind of one of the norms now.
Yeah,
you know, let's
so
be,
true. Won't it be great when it's just as normal to not drink as to drink?
Yeah,
won't it be great? There's just one more little layer to this that I just want to mention, because I know that this comes up a lot, and that is those of us who used to drink when I, like for me, you know, when my kids were small, my God, that is a guilt. That is a one hell of a load of shame and guilt that you pour on yourself. Like, why did I do that? You know? And I think that's kind of the other layer that a lot of people have to deal with. And so, and again, that can kind of blindside you. You can be a few weeks into ditching the booze and everything's going good. And then suddenly you hit with the shame of what you've done and oh my God, you know, all the stuff from the past. But particularly if you are a parent, and then you start going down this route of what have I done? What have I, you know, what now, what's going to happen? I don't know what your answer to that is. I mean, I normally I did a great podcast. I don't know if you heard it, with Dr. Eric Sigmund. You should have listened to that. It was fantastic.
Well,
He's a psychologist and educational speaker. And he's got a great book that he wrote that came out years ago called Alcohol Nation, talking about children drinking. But he also does an awful lot of work around the effect of drinking on kids, and you know. And anyway, he talks in there about how children do, in many, many cases, model their parents.
Yeah.
And in not so many words, he kind of says, you know, it's perfectly okay to actually say to your kids, I got it wrong.
Yeah.
I got it wrong. And here's why I don't think you should drink. Because people go through this thing of, oh, well, what about, I can't stop my teenagers from, you know, ramping it up, because look what I've done. I'm terrible. Yeah. And his attitude is, well, no, you can absolutely have an open conversation and say, yeah, this was completely shit. and this is what I did wrong.
And I've just had that conversation. I've had it a few times, but actually with my older two children who are 15 and 13, we have very open conversations. And even this morning, I said to my middle child, she's 13, what do you think about me that used to drink? And she said, oh, I didn't like it. I didn't like how loud you got and how you always had to be telling us you loved us all the time. It never felt real. Mm. And so I don't kind of say, oh, I did this wrong, I did that wrong, I did the other wrong. But when she raises something that upset her and I ask, I dig for it, you know, how do you feel about this? Then I just say, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have done that. That, you know, that was the alcohol. And, you know, this is a really good, this is why I don't want to drink anymore. You remind me why I don't want to drink anymore. And we have that conversation. It's very healthy to have.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, putting your children in touch with a helpline like NCOA, if you've got it wrong, can also help you to come to terms with the guilt, because you're helping them. You're helping your children. You're doing something proactive, and you're intervening before it's too late, because cycles continue. And if you don't have these conversations, I grew up as a child adamant to never be an alcoholic and went very rapidly down that same rabbit hole because cycles repeat. And if I'd have had the support from somewhere like NCOA, I honestly believe I would have had the tools not to go down that road.
Yeah.
It's very hard, I think. I see it, Janie, with my 21-year-old. She is the exact same version that I was. She drinks for the same reason. I see when she's had a bit of an argument with a boyfriend, she'll go and get drunk with her friends. And I'm like, oh, no, she's doing exactly what I did. And the guilt around that is very real, and it's very easy to try and pretend to yourself that it's not your fault to make it easier. But I think just doing what you're doing and stopping and living that life now can only show them, and like you said, being honest about it and saying, you know what, I did get it wrong. And I say that with my 21-year-old, and she'll say to me, you know, when I do have children, I will stop drinking. I'll go sober. So she sees a sober life. She's not ready for it yet, although I do keep really trying.
Yeah, you do really trying.
You have to come to this in your own time. Don't you? But that's interesting, because, you know, she will be noticing things about you. You know, she will. It will be rubbing off when it's the right time.
Absolutely. And she's so, so proud of what we do. You know, she'll tell her friends, and she shares all our like Instagrams and things like that. She's very, very proud. And I know, so it's kind of like having that balance between being kind to yourself.
I'm the same as I've got a son who's 22, and he's at uni and he drinks, you know, like, and not every day. Funny, it's interesting with younger people. They don't drink the way we used to drink.
Yeah,
kind of like every day. You know, it's more of a binge thing, isn't it? He drinks like, you know, way too much sometimes. And then when he was at home over lockdown, he's quite into mixing cocktails and stuff. So I got him to actually do a mini course for me. So he's done this whole workshop of alcohol. I'm going to put it out soon. It's really cool.
Stick.
So he's done this whole workshop of alcohol-free cocktails. So it's great. So of course, he's come up with some great ideas using alcohol-free drinks, putting this kind of twist on it. So there he's got this kind of product of alcohol-free drinks. So he said to me, do you realize I'm still going to drink, don't you? That's absolutely fine. But you know what? Look how much he's got invested in the alcohol-free stuff. Some of it's got to rub off, right?
Yeah, some of it will do.
It's funny. Anyways, guys, it's great to talk to you. It's a really serious subject, isn't it? But it's really, really great to kind of unpack it a little bit and to know that there is somewhere that people can kind of get more information and stuff. It's brilliant, really brilliant. You guys are just so amazing. You totally rock. I love it. I love your work. Thanks for having us. It's been really good. And I'll put those links on the show notes as well, and we'll get, you know, get a bit more awareness for that charity, definitely. Thanks ever so much, guys. Take care. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
So I'll make sure all the links go in the show notes, the charity, obviously, nacoa.org.uk. And again, you know, one of the things that really came out of that interview for me was the importance of wanting to give back, you know, and wanting to contribute in some way. And so if that, you know, resonates with you, then do check it out further. I'm sure they could use many more volunteers. And, you know, what an amazing thing just to spread awareness for the kind of work that they're doing. Don't forget then, the Sober Club opens December the 1st. You can drop me a line if you're interested. Make sure you're on the waiting list and you're getting our emails. It's thesoberclub.com. And I look forward to seeing you same time next week. Oh, don't forget the telly thing, the little telly thing that I'm doing. Being Imperfectly Natural is the show. The channel is Feel Good Factor TV. It's on Sky Channel 192. Sky Channel 192. It's the showcase channel. And my little segment is 9 a.m. Saturday morning. And this week is a lovely piece with an organic hairdresser. So we look at natural hair care. So that might be of interest for some of you. Again, it's all loads of holistic living tips on there. So make sure you check it out. Coming up in the next few weeks on the podcast, got some amazing guests. So lucky to get some amazing people. I've got a Sober Club member sharing his story. Looking forward to that. He's a musician too, so he might play some of his music. I've got, let me see. Oh my goodness, I've got so many people coming up. I can't think straight. Anyways, you'll get to find out. It's all coming along. Oh, and very exciting bit of news. I've also got this lovely little mini cocktail, alcohol-free cocktail making workshop. Because I've often said that I'm not the kind of person that finds kind of recipes and stuff very easy to follow. I find it really quite difficult when I look at something. I'm much more visual, so I need to actually watch someone doing the thing, cooking the meal or making the juice. So I've teamed up with a cocktail mixologist and done a little mini workshop, alcohol-free making workshop. So it's a twist on six classic cocktails that you can make alcohol free. So if you like the sound of that, go to thesoberclub.com and you'll find it there somewhere. I'll put the link in the show notes too. Have yourself a great week. Don't forget, if you are struggling, please reach out. And if you're in the early stages of ditching the booze, give yourself a big hug. Just know that this is worth doing. Sending you lots of love. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.